Fucinemute ospita nel contesto di Absolute Poetry stasera Mark Kelly Smith, inventore assoluto del Poetry Slam o Slam Poetry a seconda, un personaggio direi, oserei dire mitico, al quale cercheremo di estrarre qualche curiosità su questo, chiamiamolo, nuovo modo di fare arte e poesia, nuovo non tanto perché ha più di 20 anni in realtà. Mark, how did the idea of bringing competition into poetry readings strike you at first?
Oh, well, that's a good question. When the slam movement actually began before there was a show called The Slam. And it was myself and the people that followed me in Chicago, we began performing. At that time, no one performed poetry. No one tried, no poet tried to put any passion or art into their performance. We started doing that at a place called the Get Me High Jazz Club on a Monday night show, and it became very successful. I formed a poetry ensemble. We did ensemble work, very much like what happens at the Absolute Festival here, with music, costumes, interactive voices, combined voices, and became very successful. We wanted to start a second show, and we went to the owner of the Green Mill Jazz Club and asked them for fun. I asked him for Sunday nights, and he gave me the show. I called the show the Uptown Poetry Slam. And in the first few weeks of that show, we always had like a half hour at the end of it that we ran out of material. So on the moment, we did a competition. There had been some competitions in Chicago before that with poetry. We tried the idea, and it worked that night. So then every Sunday night, we started ending the show with this competition. And the prizes at first were cupcakes, ended up as $10, still is $10, it's big $10. The winner gets $10, woo! It was never meant to be a serious competition. That's how it started. As the concept of an entertaining poetry show started to move around the country, they always kept a competition with it. The media, it's an easy story for the media. Oh, it's a poetry competition. It's hard to explain the rest of it, the performance aspect and the audience interaction, but competition, and that's how it started to spread.
And that's what you said many times. I've read many interviews in which you said, you know, this thing of the competition functions as a trigger for people to actually get interested in performance, but it's not a good thing, not always a good thing to me. Is that true? Do you
absolutely true. Whenever a show becomes just a competition, a couple things happen. The poets start taking themselves too seriously. A kind of a bad spirit develops in the room, and the audiences start going down. And it becomes, once again, just some poets reading to other poets. The thing about the Green Mill and other slams that have used the original concept is that we have a real audience. For 22 years, I've been attracting 200 to 300 people every Sunday night. Over 50,000 different people have seen my show in Chicago. And that can be said for Timo Brunke's show in Stuttgart, Raoul Patzak and Kobolansky's show at the Substrance in Munich, Chris Mooney Singh's show in Singapore. The shows that have the idea in their head of this combining poetry with all the different performing arts, And then also having this competition in it as just a one more component to it, those are the shows that are thriving across the world.
That brings me to my next question. There is also another element which is very important in slam, and it sort of broke up a tradition of the poet being there to be listened to, and it brought him down from the pedestal and into the audience, and that is such a, I wouldn't use the democratic word because it's sort of ambiguous, but it's the poet, you said in many interviews, the poet has a responsibility to get the audience to listen to him. So it's exactly the opposite concept of, you know, traditional poetry.
You're good. I mean, I haven't been able to make that point here in Italy yet, because there's just so much to say about it. It's hard to, the slam is such a big concept, it's hard to get it sometimes, but that is another of the main principles of what I did that turned things upside down and worked. When I started, you went to a poetry reading. It was either I am the professor who knows all about poetry, and if you don't understand what I'm saying, well then something's wrong with you, or I am the mystic. I am the mystic poet who I'm on another level, you know, and unless you sit in the lotus position and you're not gonna understand me, and it, you know, and when they spoke their words, they didn't try to communicate. This is communication. Whenever anybody opens their mouth on a stage, it's an attempt to communicate. What we did at the beginning at the Get Me High is we learned how to communicate, and we made it our obligation to communicate. If the audience was falling asleep, it was our fault, not their fault. And there's a poet in America, Wendell Berry, who probably wouldn't like the slam. I don't know, he might like it. But he said a very wise thing. He said, poetry is not to glorify the poet, it's to celebrate the community around the poet. And you know, in third world countries like Pakistan, Afghanistan, South America, they never lost this tradition of the poet being the servant to the community. I was amazed when I started to find out about the world that, for instance, in Pakistan, it's still in a village, they'll have a night where everyone sits around in a circle around the campfire, and they will read their poems and the classic poems and keep them alive. It's a community thing, and I think you're the first reporter that's ever asked me about that.
Well, that's strange, because it's just so striking. I mean, it's what makes it different from other kind of performances, certainly. Yeah. I've done my drawings too, see? It is the poet traditionally.
Yeah. Very good. We should publish this book.
Okay, I've got another question. Got thinking about the ways people in literature generally, not only in poetry, even before the actual putting it into action, thought about mixing things up and connecting various kinds of media. And I mean, I thought of Burroughs, I don't know why, because of his cut-up thing, and
right.
I thought maybe this slam thing, even not with conscience, I mean, but just because of a continuation in the history of
that,
you know,
a progression from
maybe
that.
Of course, but I mean, it's kind of strange. It's sort of an evolution to me. People who think, who widen their minds, always think of putting things together, not to close up. And I think, you know, when, and also about the words, you know, words. Poetry is about words. Words are music. It's a whole very, very, very big thing. And they thought Burroughs and Geisen, I don't know how you pronounce it, they thought of cancelling the words at one point. They said, language is a virus.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think things all meet up at one point, you know, and language is a virus. For them, it was, it's a virus contaminating the real nature of man.
Yeah.
Poets don't agree with that, obviously. Language is a virus, but I think the other way around, to spread, as you said, knowledge, to spread the same feelings, to let people know what's going on. What do you think about this? Do you think there's too much in it?
No, boy, it's you know, that's a topic from my. I'm not a smart guy. You know, there's, you know, kids that are 12 years old know more than me, but it is a topic for our time, and I can see it in my world. What's happened in the slam world is that in the States and now around the world, there are poets who have become extremely expert at communicating. And many of them grab ideas from the media that they know are going to succeed with the audience. They don't come from their experience. They don't even come from their beliefs. And they communicate them so well, just like our politicians have learned to communicate so well, that the people are taken in. For me, to do that with art, we all understand in politics, when we all are skeptical of the best politician that's speaking to us. We've learned that. But when artists start to do the same thing, to me, that's the most outrageous thing that can happen. Because art is sacred. And if you don't live and truly believe what you're saying, that, you know, that's bad art. That's dangerous, and that's to me is a virus. I can agree with that. You know, would the world be better if we, you know, I think the Buddha would tell us that the world would be better if we didn't talk, you know. But there's something else that also happens, I know, as a performer. I can perform, do a good job, and people look at the technique and they, that's great. But the moment for me that's important as a performer is when I start speaking something that becomes so honest and so vulnerable that there's something that starts happening between us. The theater people know this all the time. It's called a theater moment, when all minds and all hearts have been come together, and it's some kind of cosmic thing. You know, maybe someday the scientists will figure out what's going on with it, but there's something that happens, and that transcends any propaganda that could be. Propaganda falls when that happens, because I think that words can be the virus, but I think that when someone speaks to people and they are speaking so purely, truly, that can dispel all propaganda. I hope so, you know.
I totally agree, because I am the audience, and I know that That's true. When that moment happens, it's just when you actually realize and you know that what's being said is honest and true, and it comes from that person,
right.
Not that poet, but that person. So, with the craftsmanship of the poet, of course.
Right, because those kind of moments happen in our personal lives all the time.
Of course.
When someone is so perfectly honest with us, and it's those moments we remember them for our whole lives. What the artist does, at least the performance poet does, is he does that artfully. You know, it's by art to find the universal truth and duplicate it again in a live audience. It's not really duplicated because live audience, it's always a new thing.
I've read that you, before being an artist, or meanwhile you were an artist, but at first you actually were a construction worker. That brings me to some of the subjects that have come out here in the festival. Work, unemployment, difficult situation for young people, especially, well, we know about the Italian situations, we don't know that much about the States, but I mean, that's a bit around the world, it's going that way. Everything is flexible for those who think that this is, capitalistically speaking, a good thing, and everything is unsure and difficult. So that thing plus the your art and your ability as poets, spoken word artists, as musicians, what have you, that's a craft as well. I mean, do you still think that artists ought to be craftsmen and not, you know,
just inspired?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's what's made slam poets, performance poets, different than like Ginsberg, you know, playing, you know, smoking a little dope and playing. Performance poets are craftsmen. They keep learning more and more about this craft of performance. They don't just rely on maybe their naturally melodious voice or their natural ease of speaking with people. This is something you learn. You know, I'm basically a shy guy, you know. I never had any training. I learned on the spot performing in front of people. You know, I know, you know, when to go raise my voice and when to get soft. I know that that's a craft. You know, it's the same thing that a writer would tell a young writer, you know, okay, you're going to wait to be inspired. Well, that's fine, but I'm Stephen King, and I go and I write every day. And, you know, I'm it's David Sedaris, and I, you know, work it out every day. I do too. You know, I write every day, and I used to rehearse every day, but I got old and started being lazy. But it's a craft. Just like a musician playing the scales and learning more and more, yes, it's a craft. And you work the craft, and then at some point, sometimes you're lucky and you find that thing that has to be said. And when you put that in your craft, then you have something of real value to give to your audience and your community.
Do you think it's important for poets who actually, you know, go to do the slam thing very often, to be aware of the limits of their own of the art they're expressing as well? With limits, I mean, okay, I've got many ways of doing this, and there are lots of new inputs around me, technologies, things that I can use, or I can be bare, just as I am. But as far as verse goes, do you think it should be absolutely free for anyone to use and decide how to express themselves on the spot? Or do you think a poet is best at his performing in that context if he's got an awareness of traditional poetry, I don't know, rhyme, musical, you know, accents and all that stuff, which is, you know, is learned some way.
Well, you see, the unique thing about the slam is that it's a both a professional and amateur arena. I hope it always stays that way. So at any slam show, there are going to be somebody who has just started writing, who's getting up on the stage for the very first time because they need to express. It's the place to start out. And they're right on the stage with somebody who may have just come back from Broadway, being on a Broadway stage. That's a very unique thing too. To have a very welcoming atmosphere for people starting out and people who've already achieved a great deal. Unique to the slam, I think. So, yes, let the person get up on the stage and start. They might not know anything. They're going to know by the time they get off the stage whether they've got something or not, you know. And if they do, then yes, all the slam poets should read deeply, and they should learn all the technique that there is. As an artist, you want to have as many choices as you can. You don't have to use them all, but you want in your toolbox all these choices, both in writing and in performance. I always tell when professors say, oh, that's slam poetry, that's not. I tell people that I believe performance poetry is a higher art form. And I say that because as a performance poet, we have all the choices when we create our texts for communicating. We have all the choices for creating a text in that form of communication. And we have all the choices for performance communication. You put them together, you've got a higher art form, I think, because you have more choices. You can write this, you know, my classic example when I teach kids is, okay, let's take the text, I love you. Okay? Well, the text says, I love you. We know that. So, okay, let me show you the choices of I love you. Here's, I love you! I love you. I love you. Same three words. But now we have another art form put to it, and the communication is richer. And it's not left up to the person who reads it to make the choice. It's the artist's choice of how that's communicated. So sometimes the professors and the scholars are very frustrating in their ignorance. It seems so logical and so clear to me, and I'm not a smart guy. The art form came from the oral tradition. When it was put on the page, the audiences started dropping off, you know. And now that it's being spoken again, the audiences are coming back. It makes sense.
I'm curious about the figure of the MC. How can he turn the fortunes of the slam in question by doing what?
You know, and it's an interesting thing that this in Italy, it's the first time everybody that's interviewed me has asked about the MC's role, and I'm just wondering.
That's Lello's fault.
probably that I don't know. The MC is, what we have to understand is that competition is a theatrical device. In every competition there is, you have a referee. The MC is not only the host that keeps the show going, he's the referee, you know. I'd love to know what's going on in Italy, but I'll tell you my experience of how I approach it. Every show, everybody approaches hosting a show differently. My approach was always to be the person who was the audience. I'm lucky. I'm gifted with a true sense of how an audience feels. Like, you know, like when I get up there on the stage tonight, I'm not going to connect as well as I do because of the language, you know. And I will feel that, and I will have to brace myself to think that I'm not.
You're failing, Mark. You're failing.
Because I can sense that. I can sense when an audience is that connection that happens. So when I started hosting the show or had a slam to a competition to host, I tried to always think what the audience was feeling and then vocalize that for the audience. So that, say for instance, there was a poet that was just boring the hell out of everyone. An audience is going to be very, they'll give that get, they'll let him do that, or her do it. And if someone doesn't say out loud the truth of it, it can become very dishonest. So over the years, I have been the guy who in a little sarcastic way spoke what the audience wasn't going to say. Just a line or two. And then the audience feels, oh, yes, I'm not crazy. That guy was off on some other planet, you know. The slams that don't do that are in trouble. What the good slams, not only in the competition but in a show itself, what a good show has is it has an honest audience that's going to give the poet on the stage pretty honest feedback of what they get. When you don't have that, you're like in a dysfunctional family. You know, the family where, you know, somebody's beating up somebody else and nobody says anything about it. We all live in it. Why go to a show for it, you know? That's another principle of the slam that's very important, that you have honest feedback from the audience.
Okay. Abbiamo tempo per una ultima piccola? Hai l'orologio? Okay, just one last quick one.
Sure.
A few strokes of paint, sort of, about the absolute poetry. What atmosphere did you find?
Well, what's great for me, and what is, you know, unique to the places that I've gone. I mean, there are many places where the music is being combined with the poetry. Everybody seems to have their poetry band and everything. What struck me about the Absolute Festival was that the exploration of all these different combination of the performing arts and media together reminded me of Chicago back in the late 1980s and early 1990s. It was, people were daring and try stuff, and it's so, to me, that's so wonderful, the combination of the voices and everything. And you know what? In America, somehow, that people stopped doing that. There's certain pockets, but it didn't spread. partly because of this serious competition thing that in some circles. So I applaud the Absolute Poetry Festival and Lalo to put the emphasis on this combination of the arts and then also bringing in the more traditional people at the same time, so the crossover happens. There's a festival in Australia on the Sunshine Coast that does the same thing, brings in these people that are very daring and pushing the envelope of how to combine words with other performance. That's what's struck me, man. When Lalo's band was up there playing, I wanted to get on that stage and start jamming with them. It was just, it was, let's go, you know. Oh, that kind of, it stirs an audience, you know. I'm pretty jaded. I've seen all kinds for 25 years. When you charge me up, You're not that I'm the barometer, but it was good. And the other thing that struck me about it is that, hey, look, Wednesday night, there's 200 people there.
Yeah.
You can, believe me, you can go to some very prestigious poetry festivals, and on the Wednesday night, maybe Friday and Saturday it's full house, but on the Wednesday night, there's nobody there. So, very good thing. And good that it's in a in a place that maybe doesn't get lots and lots of culture. And that it's a place of ordinary people. I'm an ordinary guy. My audience in Chicago is ordinary people from homeless to scientists, plumbers, cops, everybody. That's my thing. My thing has always been, I want a general audience. I don't want the art audience. I want regular everyday people, and that seems to be what's happening here too.
Okay, it's been a great, great pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoy the rest of the stay.
This is a good interview. I like it.
Thank you.
Hey, this was great.